Elevators are unusual places, aren't they? Especially crowded ones. Have you ever been in one of these elevators packed like sardines, too close to people you've never met before? And part of elevator etiquette is that you don't really touch anybody. Like, in fact, I freaked out my teenage son years ago by reaching down and pinching his butt from across the elevator. He thought the old woman behind him was getting frisky. Anyway, you're crammed all together, and the etiquette says, don't touch. But also, don't talk and don't look at anyone either. In fact, where's the only place that you can look when you're on an elevator? That's right, up at the numbers. See, you know your elevator etiquette too. In many respects, that elevator is a microcosm of our society, an impersonal place where even though we're in close proximity, we couldn't be further apart relationally. Even though we're practically on top of each other, we are still totally anonymous, isolated, and independent. How many of you know that you can be surrounded by people day after day and not experience any meaningful connections? You can be part of a crowd and not have any true community, which means you can be part of a team at work, a student in school, an athlete in a sport, a member of a gym, even part of a church, and not feel like you belong or are accepted by anyone. Heck, you can share a street address, a dinner table, even the same bedroom, and not feel like you're in a meaningful relationship with that other person. And so we're in this final week of our series of 8 Grace Sundays. And today we're going to be looking at our core value that says we want to be a church of authentic relationships. Here's how it reads. We won't put on our Sunday best and pretend everything is okay. We create environments where it's safe to share stories of struggle, triumph, sadness, doubt, and hope. So this is one of our core 5 values that we've covered in our sermons this month. Previously, we talked about spiritual vitality, accessible biblical truth, outward focus, and all in. And today, we're looking at authentic relationships. Now, we try to model this value at every level of our church. So right here in this preaching ministry, we try to be very real and transparent, and we just try to be normal. If you are a fly on the wall of any of our high-level leadership meetings at Grace, our senior directors meeting, our site meetings, our elders meetings, you would hear us spending the first portion of every one of those meetings checking in personally, asking questions like, how are you really? How's your marriage? How's your relationship with God? What are some prayer needs? What's going well and what are you struggling with? Because we want authentic relationships to permeate everything we do as a church. Why? Well, because at its core, Christianity is about authentic relationships. Christianity has creeds and they're important. And we have sacraments and communion and baptism and they're central. We have our sacred text, the Bible, and it's inspired. But every other religion of the world also has creeds and traditions and sacred texts. You see, one of the things that differentiates Christianity from every other religion in the world is that at its core, our faith is all about a God who says, let's walk in relationship together, not if you work your way up the ladder, maybe you'll get to me. Not pray a prayer this many times a day or go on this many pilgrimages or perform this many good deeds and then we'll talk. No, he says, because of my grace and mercy, I have come to you to be in relationship. You have access to me. But not only that, then God tells us that the only way that we can be complete in him is to also walk in life-giving relationships with other people. You see, at its core, Christianity is about relationships. One day, while Jesus was teaching, he was asked, what is the greatest commandment in the law? Basically, the question was inviting Jesus to boil the whole Old Testament down into a Reader's Digest version, the Old Testament for dummies. And I like questions like this because they become very clarifying. So someone asks him to cut through all the peripherals and get to the heart of the matter. What's the most important thing for us to get? And Jesus says, okay, I'll give you 2. The most important thing is to love God with everything you've got. Heart, soul, mind, and strength. But then he says, there's a second, and it's equally important. It's to love your neighbor as yourself. Love God and love people. You hear how relational that is? He doesn't say, obey this list of rules. He doesn't say, perform these practices or believe these doctrines. He says, enter into a love relationship with God and with the people around you, and then you've gotten at the core of the Christian faith. So it makes sense that relationships are so close to the heart of God. When you think about the Trinity, the Godhead, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, God exists in an eternal relationship by definition. Then when Jesus came, he poured his life in relationship into 3 people, and then into 12 people, and then to 70 people, and 120 people. He lived his life on this earth in deep, authentic relationships. He could have been a recluse. He could have cordoned himself off in a cave somewhere in the Middle East and lit candles and authored sacred writings as an isolated monk, but he was deeply involved in relationships with the people in his life, which means you and I too were made for authentic relationships. Deep down, we crave them. We long for them. We were created with the need for them. And when we don't have them, it tends to go really bad. We substitute. So for example, with technology, connectivity is easier now than it's ever been. You can make connections with people more quickly than you've ever been able to in the history of the modern world. Owen and Jaron, two guys in our student ministry, recently friended me on Snapchat. My daughter caught the moment when I accepted their friend request. It was totally dope. I mean, no cap. We're tight now. We're BFFs. Right. But now I can share with them and the people all over the globe the most useless, worthless bits of information about my life you could ever want to know. I can take a picture of my Chipotle chicken bowl and send it out to everyone so they can be jealous of my carnitas and corn salsa. But here's the thing. Although we are more connected than we've ever been, with more people than we've ever been, despite the fact that it's easier to find groups with shared common interests than it's ever been, we feel more alone and more unknown than at any time in recent history. And COVID has only exacerbated an already existing problem. And we now have record numbers of people who feel lonely, who are depressed, and who are paralyzed by social anxiety. In his book, Life in Community, Dustin Willis compares what's happening to our relationships to some weight loss advice he had received. Someone said to him, here's how to lose weight. And every time you feel the urge to eat, just chew ice instead, because the sensation of chewing and consuming the ice will help to soothe the urge to want to eat food. They said, it's a way to trick your body. Now, he says that when he tried this method, he discovered that while ice is good for cooling a drink, it's terrible for satisfying your appetite. It provides this momentary relief, but you're almost immediately hungry again. This is such a powerful analogy to what we have with social media. It tricks us by giving a momentary relational jolt, but it only leaves us feeling hungrier for real connection than we did before. And if we're not careful, our life can start to resemble an awkward elevator, surrounded by a lot of people without a single meaningful connection. I can't wait to explore this more in our new sermon series starting next week called Analog Life in a Digital World. But I ask, do you have some authentic relationships with other Christians? Do you have a group of people where it's okay to share struggle and triumph and joy and sadness? Like, when was the last time that you had a conversation with someone that was real? And you like walked away feeling like, you know, that was a safe place to really be me, or that person genuinely cared for me and meaningfully spoke into my life. Do you have authentic relationships? Are you experiencing this critical core value in your personal life? Because not only did God create us for meaningful relationships, and not only has he modeled relationships through the Trinity and through the disciples and Jesus, but he also built his church to function in authentic relationships. And so our text today is in 1 Thessalonians 2, 7 through 12. And as you turn there in your Bible or device, let me give you a little bit of background. This text is written by the Apostle Paul. Now remember Paul's background. He was a terrorist, a murderer of Christians, and was converted to Christianity in a dramatic encounter with Christ on the road to Damascus. And it changed the whole path of his life. But maybe even more amazing than his dramatic conversion is to see what happened immediately afterward. He didn't start taking classes. He didn't go off to seminary. Instead, God immediately begins to bring key people into Paul's life. He does it very intentionally. He does it even supernaturally. God speaks in a vision to Ananias, and he tells him the street name of where to go find Paul. You think God isn't concerned about the details of your life? He's got it all the way down to the street names. Then Paul was baptized, and he spent some time in relationship with the believers in Damascus. And then he went down to Jerusalem to join the community of the main band of the disciples, the big boys, Peter and James and the guys. But they were afraid, and they didn't trust his conversion, and they were ready to cast Paul out. Imagine if they had. But in Acts 9:29, the Bible says two key words. It says, but Barnabas. But Barnabas brought him to the apostles, a trusted friend, and introduced him around. He vouched for the authenticity of his faith. And God brought an advocate into Paul's life that said, no, you can't just go off on your own, Paul. You'll never make it in the Christian life on your own, Paul. Authentic relationships are too important for you just to walk out of here and give up on it, Paul. And who knows what will happen to your fledgling faith if you don't find a group of people to love and be loved by. And so God sent Barnabas to pave the way for Paul to have authentic relationships. You see how important this is to God? Barnabas became Paul's encourager and confronter and advocate in authentic relationship. So can I play the role of Barnabas today? And through this sermon, take you by the shoulders and say, authentic relationships are too important for you to ignore. Maybe you feel like, well, I've tried before and I wasn't able to break in. But listen, you need to be in community. It's how God designed your faith to operate. And so Paul went on to be the greatest missionary that Christianity has ever known. And not surprisingly, central to Paul's strategy was this same idea of authentic relationships. Every church Paul planted was started with a core of people whom he continually pleaded with through letters to love each other, to care for each other, to honor one another, encourage one another, be at peace with one another, invest in one another. And those letters make up most of our New Testament, and we're going to go to one of them today at 1 Thessalonians 2:7. We get this backstage pass to how this all worked out as Paul remembers the time that he spent in community with this particular church plant. Look what he says, verse 7. He says, "But we proved to be gentle among you, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. Having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. For you recall, brethren, our labor and our hardship, how working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you, we proclaim to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, how devoutly and uprightly and blamelessly we behaved toward you believers. Just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each of you as a father would his own children, so that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory." It's a powerful verse. Paul is describing here the church. He's describing an environment that was created so that people could experience more and more of Jesus, become more and more like Jesus. You see, if the goal of our lives is to become more and more like Jesus, we all need a kind of greenhouse like this to nurture, to water, to supplement our growth, where authentic relationships act like a fertilizer that's going to help us to grow. And so I want us to learn today from this text three building blocks of authentic relationships. Here's the first building block. You give and receive care. Authentic relationships involve caring for the needs of others. Listen to the words Paul uses to describe the environment that they were in. He says, starting in verse 7, that we were gentle, that we had fond affection, that we shared our lives, that we cared, he says, like a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. These are all descriptions of intentional care. Authentic relationships always involve a combination of having your needs met and meeting the needs of others. How many of you know that we all have needs? Amen. Think about Paul's metaphor here. He says, "I cared for you like a nursing mother." Think about a baby who's nursing. A nursing baby is nothing but a big pile of needs. It doesn't pay the rent. It doesn't leave tips. There's no thanks. The baby's not like, "Hey, thanks, Mom, the good quality today." No, nobody's getting paid for taking care of this little parasite. In fact, you're the one paying for it in many, many ways. And yet there is total and unadulterated acceptance and care and love by the mother for that baby, even though the baby has nothing to offer back except their needs. The mom is just giving and giving and giving. I mean, there are sleepless nights. They're juggling schedules. They're really ugly diapers. There are ear infections. And on top of that, the only means of communication during these early months is screaming and crying. And that goes for the baby too. You'll get that in a minute. Here's the thing though. This is the image that Paul is painting about what authentic relationships require. It involves having needs and caring for needs when our situation is most helpless. And so In real grown-up relationships, there are needs too. And sometimes it feels like you're the only one giving. But don't forget, guys, your time is coming. The moment will come when you'll be the one in need. And one of the beautiful things about being in friendship together with other Christians is that there will be times when you care and times when you will be cared for. There are seasons in life when trials will hit you, and the care you need won't be available through Facebook. And it won't be available through your reading group or through your workout partner or even me or another pastor, but through other compassionate, caring believers who are conduits of God's love and grace to you. You may ask, well, doesn't God promise to care for my needs? And the answer is yes, but God usually extends his care to us through his obedient children. I'm so fortunate to have long-time authentic relationships with some friends who I happen to get to work with, people like Aaron and Danielle and Kathy and Brian and many others who are on our staff. We've been serving together in community for nearly 20 years, and there have been times when I've cared for them, and there's been times when they've cared for me. I was just remembering recently some years back when Kim and I received some scary health diagnosis about one of our kids. Everything ended up working out in the end, but there were some very frightening days as we walked through that time. And I was trying to be strong for Kim and for our family whenever we talked about it. I wasn't really letting my emotion out much, but I remember a day when it was really weighing on me. I was writing my sermon at Wegmans, and Danielle, one of our staffers here at Grace, came in to chat about a quick ministry decision that we needed to make. And I just broke. I lost it. I was blubbering like a fool in Wegmans, saying all the stuff that I'd been thinking, but I hadn't spoken out loud. And she was like, hey, buddy, I just needed a quick budget decision. No, she cried with me. She prayed for me. She listened to me. She cared. Because caring happens when you're in authentic relationships with people. So again, I ask, do you have people in your life who care for you when you need them and who you care for when they need you? And listen, some of you are really good at giving care, but really bad at receiving care when you're in need. And you need to get better at it. You need to get better at asking and then humbly receiving as if it was from God himself. And some of you have the opposite problem. You're so fixated on your own needs that you never get past your own needs and get outside to the needs of others. You never become the hands and feet of Jesus because you can't get your eyes off yourself. So we need both of these things. And here at Grace, we try to create space for these kinds of relationships to happen. And do you know where care happens best in a church like ours? In a life group. Grace is a big place, but life groups are where we get small. I can't tell you the number of times my heart has been put at ease when someone comes up and says, Pastor Derek, last year my family walked through this tragedy or we lost this loved one. And I'll start to say, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't know. And then they say, no, but we're in a life group. And our life group provided such incredible care during that time. They brought us meals. They watched our kids. They sent us cards. They prayed for us. And I breathe a big sigh of relief because the church did its thing, extending care. You see, groups provide this first building block where you give and receive care. Here's the second building block of authentic relationships. You push through niceties and get to honesty. In our text, Paul shifts his metaphor from the care of a nursing mother in verse 7 to the accountability and motivation and even honesty of a father. Look at the phrasing that he uses in verses 9 through 11. He says, we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. And so, in other words, we told you the truth of the gospel. And then he says, we told you the truth about you too, exhorting and encouraging and imploring each one of you as a father would his own children. And so he's saying, we moved beyond that place of just sharing and meeting needs when you were a little baby, but now you're more like a teenager and we're entering that deeper place of honesty, like a father to his children. And one of the things that makes authentic relationships authentic is that we tell each other the truth, amen? We push through the surface stuff, we get past the niceties, and we're honest with each other. You see, if the goal is authentic relationships, it is not enough to just have a few friends with common interests. Like we have our CrossFit friends, we have our music friends, we have our occasional neighborhood friends. These friends are important, and it's crucial that we have some people in our lives that are at that acquaintance level. But we also need a few with whom we can get beneath the surface and get honest and accountable with each other. True authenticity happens when the masks come off and conversations get deep and hearts get vulnerable and lives are shared and feedback is invited and grace flows. This is where true spiritual progress starts to happen. We desperately need the truth in our lives. You know why? It helps us to avoid hypocrisy. You know, hypocrisy is the number one thing that keeps non-Christians from coming to church. So when we don't have these honest relationships, most Christians just resort to pretending. It's how we become hypocrites. Willis's book tells a story of a young lawyer who had just started his own law firm. He leased a small storefront and took out a loan for some expensive office furniture. And this lawyer is just getting started. And he's trying to get his feet under him, and hadn't even landed his first client yet, but he sat faithfully in his new office waiting for some action. And finally, he heard somebody walk through the front door, and he wanted to look impressive, and so the lawyer immediately began frantically to appear busy and important. And so he picked up the phone, and he started rattling off a bunch of big legal words to the make-believe person on the other end of the line. And after the man who walked in had waited for a few minutes, the lawyer hung up the phone very importantly and said to him, "Hi, what can I help you with?" The guy looked back at him and said, "I'm just here to set up your phone line." There's a lot of pretending going on. I think there's a lot of pretending going on in the church as well. We need each other to tell the truth if we're going to break free from our pretend, phony, pseudo-spiritual lives. We want to present this perfectly manicured, carefully filtered picture of our lives on Instagram, but sometimes that image isn't even close to the truth of what's really going on. And meanwhile, you desperately need people who know the real you so that they can tell you the truth. You know where honesty happens best in a church like ours? In a life group. It's not going to happen in a big room full of people, but it will happen in a living room. It won't happen in rows in the church, but it can happen in small circles of loving and caring Christians around a couch in a living room. And it may not be with your whole life group, but maybe just one other person or two trusted people in your group who you connect with, you can spin off with for some coffee and get real every once in a while. We need people who, as Paul said, will exhort, encourage, and implore us because we won't follow Christ well any other way. So, authentic relationships are where you can give and receive care, where you can push through niceties and get to honesty. Here's the third building block of authentic relationships. It's you prioritize spiritual growth. It's kind of the result of these other two, of putting yourself in a caring and truth-filled environment. But look at what Paul says in verse 12. He says that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Into his own kingdom. I love that. Authentic relationships motivate us to walk in a way that's worthy of the God we serve. Isn't that what we're all looking for? To walk worthy of our God? Paul maintains this family metaphor. Remember, he went from the care of a nursing mother to the honest evaluation of a motivating father. And now mom and dad are together watching their child truly walk. And I've always pictured, when I read this verse, a toddler just learning to walk. Like mom and dad are saying, "Hey, little guy, we love you, but we want to teach you the joy of forward motion." So, you know, you prop the kid up on the table and you back up and you hold out your arms and you know, tell him, get over here. You know, it's an environment that says, we'll love you where you are, but we're not content with where you are either. It's time to walk. And so we'll offer you care, but we'll also offer you honesty. We'll accept you completely as you are, but we'll also call you forward to develop you into what you aren't yet. So now take a step. But in recent years, my mental picture of this verse has changed. Instead of a toddler walking for the first time, I think of dropping a child off at college. Some of you, like us, have had to do this recently. It's a different way of encouraging them to walk. It has some similarities to their toddler years, but instead of physically walking for the first time, that they're walking into life. And you look at them and you say, "We nurtured you. We cared for you. And we told you the truth about yourself and about the world and about God as best we could. And now it's time for you to walk out on your own. The biggest growth edge of your life is about to happen right now, son or daughter. Now walk in a manner worthy of your upbringing, your family. Make us proud." Right? That's what Paul is doing here spiritually. He's saying, while we were there with you, we were like a nursing mother. and like a motivating father. And we worked hard day and night so that in the end, we could kind of drop you off and say, now walk in a manner worthy of your calling. And what he's describing here is spiritual growth. It's maturity. He's saying, grow up in your faith. And the truth is, spiritual growth happens best in the context of authentic relationships. There's no such thing as a Lone Ranger Christian. Spiritual growth doesn't happen alone, by yourself, outside the context of relationships. We need each other. You know why? Because when it comes to spiritual growth, we have an extraordinary capacity for self-deception. Let me say it a different way. We think we're better than we are. And it's because we judge ourselves by our intentions rather than by our actions. For example, we can read a verse in the Bible like Colossians 3 that says, clothe yourselves with compassion and kindness and humility and gentleness and patience. Now, we obviously know that we're not perfect at those things, but we can give ourselves a lot of credit for doing very little with those things. For example, it's easy for me to think I'm doing pretty good on the whole compassion thing when I'm all by myself. I can watch a news story on my Twitter feed of atrocities happening around the world and feel really bad for those people. And I can think to myself, you know what? I'm a compassionate person. Look how tender I responded to this news story. Look at my compassionate heart. Or you walk by and peek in your kid's bedroom at night and check on them while they're sleeping. You're just filled with gentleness and patience toward those little guys. Just like the verse talks about, you think, I can't imagine that it would ever be in me to get angry at them, those little angels. And then they wake up the next day, and suddenly you can imagine it. I heard someone say one time, I can get along with anyone as long as one of us is asleep. It's when we're both awake that the problems seem to creep in. So this is a really important truth about spiritual growth. All day long, I can imagine myself doing generous things, while at the same time, never actually doing anything generous. Like my good intentions never get translated into reality. I can imagine myself doing something generous, and I think, well, there you go. I'm a generous person. Or I imagine how I'm gonna be so patient with my wife the next time I'm annoyed with her, and I think, man, I am making some serious strides in my patience until I get annoyed with her again. You see how we can deceive ourselves. We need to push past the daydreams and actually grow spiritually. And do you know where that spiritual growth happens best in a church like ours? You got it, in a life group. Because the test of my spiritual growth happens in community. Like, how do I actually behave when there are real people involved? I get to test it out if I'm really patient. Because guess what? Someone's gonna be annoying in that life group from time to time. In fact, maybe that should be our new motto for life groups. We'll supply you with annoying people to help your spiritual growth. No, I'm kidding. The best of the best are in our life groups, okay? But as soon as you start rubbing shoulders with other people, you find out if you really are gentle or if you really are compassionate or generous. And you can take those daydreams and try them out in real life. And that group can then hold you accountable to do some of the stuff that you imagine yourself doing but don't actually do. And you can see your growth. When someone voices a need in your group and you respond with generosity, you can look back and say, 3 years ago, I never would have done that. Look at the progress. Or when you offer to pray for someone in your group whose kid is struggling and you think, man, a year ago, I could have never prayed out loud in front of this group. You know what that's called? Spiritual growth. And it gets prioritized in authentic relationships. But without authentic relationships, you could live your whole life thinking that you're something that you're not. And what a shame that would be. Because the goal of this life is simple. It's to be more and more like Jesus. Do you know what that word Christian means? It means little Christ. Christianity is not a religion. It's not a creed or a Sunday morning tradition. It's a lifelong relational process of becoming more and more like Jesus. And the best way to do that is in authentic relationships. And in a church like ours, that happens in life groups. So during the month of September, we're going to be encouraging our whole church to do one of two things. Find a group, or maybe it's your turn to start a group. If you're interested in starting a group, we have a great boot camp experience that will train you and talk you and walk you through the whole thing. That boot camp starts the second Sunday in September. But for some of you, this step is just to get in a group. Right now, we have around 700 people at Grace in nearly 60 existing life groups that meet all over Erie and Erie County. And our goal is this year to see 400 more adults join a group and to launch 55 new short-term life groups with 55 new life group leaders. That's a big goal. but it's also representative of how important we believe that this is. Listen, we have all kinds of options. We have in-person groups. We have online groups. We have challenge groups. You can go to whoisgrace.com/lifegroups to find out more information about all of that stuff, whether you want to be in a group or lead a group. I'm also excited because many of you know Pastor John is going to be focusing all of his efforts in this area of groups and discipleship going forward. And I believe he's going to bring a new leadership, new energy to this great ministry. But it would be a fantastic time for you to jump in. Well, next week is September and the launch of a brand new ministry year. And our ministry year runs from September to August. And so we're starting again and we're believing God for great things in this new year. Because today is a family reunion theme, we thought it would be appropriate to spend some time praying and commissioning the many of you who are getting ready to launch into this new year. Our ministry leaders, our life group leaders, even school teachers, students that are going back to school. Just as one big Grace family, we want to pray that God would do great things in and through you this year. So our host is going to come now and lead you through that time. I love you guys. God bless.